This week, I chatted to the open book that is Jordan Stevens. Jordan found fame as one half of the duo Rizzle Kicks, and since then with acting and TV presenting, and has gone on to host two brilliant podcasts about mental health. The first is fittingly called Whole Truth, and you'll see why when you listen to my conversation with Jordan. And the second, Killing It podcast, exploring mental health specifically in terms of the music industry. In this conversation, Jordan tells us why he believes that honesty is medicine and why he's drawn to podcasts that delve into the human psyche from leaders such as Russell Brand and Brené Brown. We also talk about cancel culture, the evolution of celebrity, and why Jordan has resorted to chatting to his dog in lockdown. Now, enough from me. Let's get Cast Away with Jordan Stevens. Jordan Stevens, welcome to Cast Away.
Way.
Hey, I got away. You're in lovely Margate as we speak.
I am. I'm cast away in... Well, actually, no, I can't. I don't want to disclose my position. Do you know what I mean? You know, I don't want to, like, I'm a government agent.
Okay, you could be anywhere in the world.
Yeah, I'm anywhere on the east coast of Kent, yeah.
I know you're kind of based between, you know, you're sometimes in central London and then Margate meets
Oxford. Laura, stop telling people where I am.
I can give you his address, actually. I'll just tweet about it later on.
Oh, mate.
But how does it feel to be where you are now, to be out of London, to be by the sea?
Yeah, it's a dream. London is, I think, like, I love London. It's a great city. But I do feel for people in London right now because it's, like, it just feels like a cauldron of paranoia. Mm-hmm. And also, like, a lot of people don't care. It's, like, confusing. You have people who are, like, really freaked out and then people who are just, like, living their normal lives. Whereas out here, it's kind of desolate. It's like a ghost town and it's really relaxing and beautiful. And, you know, I get to have all those little internal Zen vibes where I'm like, oh, look at that lovely tree, you know?
And some time to yourself. Speaking to a lot of people who've been on the podcast recently, Niall Horan, he was supposed to be like on a big tour now in promo for his new album. He says he's kind of enjoying the downtime. Are you like that? Because you always have a million things on the go. Yeah. And is this a time just to be present, take stock?
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I'm really getting into it. I mean, I have occasional moments of like feeling kind of suffocated, but then hilariously, I actually put the first two weeks of lockdown aside in my diary for about 2 months prior to isolate. I swear, my manager and like some close friends as witnesses, I had been saying it for a while. I was like, I'm going to go away for 2 weeks from March the 13th because I really just want to get some time to myself. And then a global pandemic happened. So, I mean, I hope it's not my fault. I don't think it's my fault.
Why did you feel you needed that time?
Just that life was quite stressful to me at that moment. But I just wanted to just feel who I was. And now I'm definitely doing that, which is nice.
I think the fact that we're all in lockdown, I do think we're talking a little bit more. I feel that for myself anyway. I'm a talker anyway. I love a good chat. And the one thing that I've really clung on to is that we're all kind of in it together. And I know... I mean, we're very lucky, you and I, even in a privileged position to have a home and to be somewhere that's safe. But we're all feeling and we're all experiencing the same
grief.
Thing.
It's grief. That's what I think is so interesting about the time is, of course, there's anxiety. But beneath that is grief because we have lost a lot of stuff. We have lost the ability to touch another person. We've lost the freedom to be able to sit in groups. We have lost. There's a lot of... loss. We've lost the safety of our future plans, and people have lost people, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's that lives in the body, and that is a very real emotional scenario that we have to unlock ourselves from. And that's why it's really important to pay attention to our feelings and to keep connecting in the ways that we do. I have also been speaking to my dog. I've been having actual full-on conversations with my dog.
And what type of dog is it?
He is a collie retriever. I rescued him a few years ago. And the weirdest thing about it is I don't think it's anything to do with quarantine. I think our relationship has just grown in that way.
I've always talked to my dog. I'm always like, have you seen my phone? Where are the keys?
Do you
where
actually?
Oh, always talk to the dog. Oh, always. Mate. One day he'll reply back and that will be a strange day. I'm definitely very grateful for my little dog at this time because I know he kind of keeps the energy and spirits up. Because sometimes it's hard to get up in the morning and I know I have to get up to let him out, go for a wee at the back. So that's kind of, that gets it going. And as I said, these conversations, I know you mentioned there, you touched on lots of things and grief and anxiety. And And you've always been great, Jordan, for talking about things. Yeah. What I love about podcasts, this little space that we've got now, it feels safe and it feels like a discussion.
Yeah. No, podcasting is an incredible kind of evolution of media, I think.
And you're no stranger. I mean, you've had two podcasts so far.
Yeah, I've kind of, it was weird. It's weird. Like you say, you'd think that it's a natural kind of step for me on the basis that I don't ever shut up, really. You think I'd be like, oh,
you said
yeah,
that, I didn't.
Yeah, I'm just like one step away from just recording myself constantly every day and just giving people a
talking to the dog.
Yeah. I'd appeared on a few episodes of stuff and I liked it. And I do have two podcasts. I have one called Whole Truth, which is an extension of my mental health campaign called I Am Whole, which is really cool. And that felt like a natural progression, just opening up a space for people to talk about mental health. I'm actually looking to expand that. I'm actually looking to kind of really branch out with the topics we cover on Whole Truth. And then more recently, I was picked up after doing Whole Truth by Spotify to do a series called Killing It, which is specifically music and mental health, which again has been with, and I present that with a woman called Petra Velzeboer, who's a life coach. Both have been amazing. I, you know, some of the episodes of Whole Truth, one particularly with Greg James, really went down, the response was quite vivid.
What did you get from doing the chat with Greg James?
What was interesting about Greg is that his wife has like actively battled her own anxiety. I don't know. It seemed like they were in an environment where they were both encouraging each other to become better people. And I just thought it was very clear in that conversation how passionate he was about that. And that was quite a lovely thing to hear, because support is essential.
So the panic attack was, I think, just a mixture of tiredness and feeling a bit overwhelmed. Yeah. And that job is overwhelming sometimes, if you let it be overwhelming. And I think when people are tired, you're more susceptible to feeling sad and a bit displaced and like, what am I doing?
Yeah.
So it was that, and mum not being very well. And
yeah, I mean, that's
and also
lot.
Bella is, you know, you, when you marry someone and when you love someone so deeply, you feel all of their things as well. And she's done amazingly well with her work in the last few months, but she suffers quite badly with stuff. And I want to make sure that I'm giving her enough time. And I sometimes don't feel like I am, and just all that stuff.
Sometimes it's just stuff. Emotionally, it just
and sometimes
comes
you
to
just, I remember I just stood in the, I stood in my bedroom and was like, I can't make a decision. I can't move. I'm sort of paralyzed with this thing. But then I just lay down on the bed and was like, this will pass. And it did. I sort of called Bella and went, I don't want you to worry, but I think I'm having a panic attack. And but it happens to a lot of people.
Is that something she's dealt with?
She has suffered quite badly with anxiety and depression over a number of years, and she manages it, and I'm aware of it, and I know what to look for, and I know the questions to ask and when to leave her and when to sort of run in and say, I'm here.
I can help. Be available.
I can help you with this. Talk to me. So she's helped a lot in understanding it and has helped me learn more about it and encouraged me to read certain things or talk to certain people about stuff. But yeah.
You've had some great guests between A Whole Truth and Killing It. And
yeah.
I think it was Killing It that you interviewed Liam Payne.
Yeah.
I've interviewed them, like, say, for Telly Things. And then, you know, as I said, I've had Niall on the podcast separately. And it's such a different dynamic. And especially with someone like Liam, who has to be very protective of everything he says. And when he came on your podcast, I remember there was one bit he talked about. I think it was the first time he auditioned for X Factor.
Oh, my God.
And he was
yeah.
saying, the stuff that people would say to him, he was ridiculed. And I think he said when he was 15 or 16, someone, he was in McDonald's or something, and someone said, oh, you're that reject from X Factor. And
yeah, scarring.
I've never heard him speak like that.
Yeah, I know. I remember feeling that exact same thing. How the podcast is structured is I kind of sit in intro, kind of, you know, loosen up the vibes. And then they kind of speak to Petra for a while, and then I come back in. And I remember hearing that. I feel as though we could have spoken to Liam for longer. There's a lot of depth to that. And I like you say, Laura, like, I don't think anyone can make any mistake in actively realizing how much those boys have had to and continue to deal with. Just because somebody has some kind of status in the material realm does not mean that being ridiculed at 15 won't stay with them. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it doesn't mean that that's something they have to actively challenge. And I'm really glad that he opened up on the podcast like that, because I know there is a barrier but mentally between the public, in inverted commas, and entertainers, but emotion has nothing to do with the material world. Seriously, like I say, like grief, love, joy, anger, they connect everybody. We all experience it the same way. No one is exempt from experiencing it differently. And I think that's what is lovely, because there is a relatability in that, you know?
You mentioned there the psychotherapist Petra, who you do Killing It with. Yeah. And what does that bring? Because I think having that expert there as well, it does bring a certain gravitas and an outcome, I suppose, to the conversations.
Yeah, it just brings a legitimacy, really, you know, because it distracts from the fact, it distracts from me just being a complete con artist, you know what I mean?
I think you know what you're talking about. I feel like you do. I feel like you've experienced a lot of things to have a right to speak.
Yeah, it's good to have that balance. And of course, she is, you know, incredibly seasoned in that world. And yeah, get along with her. And it's nice to have a bit of balance.
Each week on Killing It, we'll speak to artists who are there, have been there, who are in the music industry and battle it every day. They'll share their ups and downs, the same ups and downs I believe that we all experience, but just in a different space, maybe. But we want to investigate both, because we live in a world where sometimes it's easy to assume that everything's hunky-dory. We'll talk about the tools and strategies that help us manage whatever it is we're dealing with. Helping them to share their experiences is my amazing co-host, Petra Velzibor. How's your mental health today?
Today it's pretty good.
Really?
Last week was really intense, and I felt like I had to recover Sunday and just do nothing, so that felt good.
Aha, the magic of nothing.
It's really hard. I find it hard.
To do nothing?
To do nothing.
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
So how did you go about it?
Well, I say nothing. I went for a walk. I got some sleep. I hung out with my boyfriend. I ate some good food. So I did the nurturing my body and my mind thing.
Wow, super self-care.
I think that's what that was.
You didn't destruct at all? Not even one hot cross bun?
No.
Damn. Tell us about yourself.
So I am a psychotherapist and a coach, and I guess I just love having deep conversations with people. Yeah. So I'm excited to talk about like the music industry, and if there's anything specific about it that like fucks us up, or is it actually just what it's like out there in society today?
How do you feel about the music industry?
I think it's really fast-paced. I think there's lots of social media comparing stuff going on. I think there's a lot of judgment out there. And I think people need to look after their resilience and their mental health in a bigger way than maybe they used to.
Yeah.
But what I love is that the conversations are pretty open these days with some of us, rather than just hidden under, you know, the blanket of shame.
Has there been anyone that's been quite difficult to have on?
That's a really good question.
Maybe it's all been a breeze.
No, I mean, I just seem to be quite fascinated by people's willingness more than anything. One that resonated with me the most was when I interviewed Reggie Yates for Whole Truth, because I've always looked up to Reggie, because he was kind of like one of the only black guys I saw on television when I was younger, in Britain anyway. And like, I went on his podcast and I realized I didn't really know anything about him. Like, really. Like, I've seen him achieve a lot, but I didn't know anything about him. Mm-hmm. And that was amazing to have him in that space and just see him like, but nothing difficult. I think some people are maybe a little bit wary. There were a couple of interviews on Killing It where you could tell that the artist was quite naturally protective. But I mean, what else do you expect? I believe honesty is healing. And if someone is in touch with that at that time, then great. And if they're not, then, you know, there's just no rush, man. Like, we're not, you know what I mean? We're not tabloids.
Yeah. And I said, we've got a space. We've an hour to have a conversation. It's not a 5-minute interview where you need to get a pull quote. It's time. And time is something very valuable. As Oprah always says, you've been very open about, you know, your own issues that you've had to deal with, going through, you know, being in Rizzle Kicks and kind of coming out of it, and then, you know, having so many other parts to your career. Then also your own anxiety, your reliance on drinking and drugs and different things. I suppose, how hard was it in giving all that information up? Because, you know, once that's out there, that's out there. You can't take it back.
Yeah, you have so mad you asked that. It is the biggest gift and curse. It's that, like, I literally cannot stop myself from saying like what I think and feel. Like, I'm definitely becoming more conscientious of my responsibility to others as I grow older, you know, that like some stories aren't there for me to tell. But but in terms of my own, I honestly, I can't emphasize this enough. I believe that when a person is honest with me as well, and when I'm honest to a person, it's like medicine. Like, you can tell the difference between someone being honest and someone being guarded. You just can. Even if you intellectually believe what they're saying, I feel intuitively you know whether or not someone's being open. And I connect on that level. I love it. So the reason why I thought it was so odd that you asked me that question is that I barely ever listen back to my podcasts. I don't know why. I think it's something to do with valuing the moment, or perhaps it's some kind of anxiety that if I had said something that I didn't like, that I would then overthink it and I can't change it. And It was just something with Killing It. I was the first one to be interviewed in the first episode to kind of show the format. And I thought, no, actually, I'm going to listen to this one because maybe it'd be good to get an idea of where I'm at in terms of how I speak about certain things. And I listened to this episode and I talk quite openly about my mum and I when I'm a kid. And God, it actually makes me feel a bit sad when I say this now. But I basically listened to it and I said that my mum had these panic attacks and I said that I didn't feel safe. And I just, like, a part of me when I heard that, I don't know, my heart dropped and I rung my mum and I said to her, look, mum, I'm so sorry. Like, I've been really open about my childhood. Me and my mum are really close. She's aware of the nature of my healing and the fact that I've had to be open like this in order to help other people. But I spoke to her and I just broke down in tears. I was sobbing because I felt it must have been quite hard for her to hear me talk about her. But it actually then led to an incredibly beautiful conversation with my mom. And I added to the end of the next episode of the podcast saying, look, like, I spoke kindly about my mom, but I didn't bookend it by saying that she'd also been an incredibly supportive parent. And the fact is, the matter is, she was there. And that's why I talk about what she went through, because she was there, and that speaks volumes, you know. And sorry, I know that's actually a really long answer to
it's really question, interesting. But because there's no simple questions anyway, because all questions lead to something else. But even this speaking about your mom, the fact that you said that, it did open up this new conversation with your mom. I grew up with just my mom, and I think I said in an interview once something about, like, I grew up in a 2-bedroom house. Which is my mom. And I think they wrote something like, Laura grew up in a 2-bedroom flat. And for me, that there's no difference to that. But my mom was so proud and worked so hard to buy her little house. And she thought that by saying flat, it sounded smaller. Even though flat's absolutely fine. To me, it meant nothing to me. But she was like, I worked so hard so I could afford that for my child. And I think I made some comment in an interview once about my mom worked full time. So I dropped me to the child minors to a crash, and then I went straight to school, and then she picked me up the evenings. And I think that gave me my work ethic. She got really upset because she said she always felt that she didn't have the time to play with me. Like, because she was so tired all the time because she was working so much. And it was only after I'd said something in the interview that we had this conversation, because I said, oh no, you gave me this drive. But in her head, she'd seen it another way. And it's just, it is funny how, like, you looking back, when you said it at the time, you didn't mean anything by it, knocking your mum. It was because she was there, as you said.
Yeah. It was. She very much understood that. She really appreciated that I spoke to her. But it will, and essentially it will help. And also, that was one of many things I said, but... Mm-hmm. Yeah, I am just, I'm an open book, and I'm not going to change that. I'm proud of it. I think it's a good quality to have. But yeah, that was a tough one, and it just showed me that, well, it led to something positive.
Someone else I want to talk about who's on your list of recommendations. It's actually the second time this podcast has been mentioned, Russell Brand, Under the Skin. I think Russell's podcast, such a wide range of people listen to that podcast, older, younger, male, female, coming from all different sorts of socio backgrounds. And I think with Russell, similar to you, he's kind of had to be open to deal with his own demons.
Oh, mate, yeah. He's a very troubled man, but the way in which he's transmuted that energy, I think, is, like, admirable. You know, he's not perfect, but, like, no one is.
Yeah, sure, no one is. And with Under the Skin, I suppose, as the title says, it's kind of scraping what's beneath the surface, similar with, you know, when you interview pop stars and stuff, and we all see a certain side of people. And again, I just think Russell has a knack, doesn't he? He has a knack of kind of, maybe it's how he speaks so eloquently, he kind of lures you in and suddenly you just become completely captivated by him.
Yeah, no, it's a skill. It really is a skill. Communication, it's not easy. So it's not easy to create a space where people feel like safe enough to open up or have the kind of range of thought to approach certain subjects from a different angle and find a more interesting answer or an unusual answer. A lot of my love for that podcast is just the guests he gets on, and yeah. and his neutrality in that respect. I think he has cross-pollinated. Is that my word?
Yeah.
Like cross-pollinated politically and spiritually and everything. And I like that. I think we live in such divisive times that like having somebody willing to speak to anyone is the vibe.
I think you'd mentioned one particular episode was the Dr. Gabor Mate one.
Yeah, Gabor Mate, yeah.
Yeah, oh, which is...
Have you heard it?
Yeah, I actually listened to it last night because I hadn't listened to that one. And again, as you said, with cross-pollination, but there's such a range of people. There's such a range of people. And I think, as you said, that's the beauty of it. And each one unique in themselves. I think Russell said after this particular one that I think it was one of his favourite ones because people who don't know, the doctor, he specialises in addiction, childhood trauma,
he's
stress,
incredible.
Different forms of addiction. What was it that jumped at you?
Oh, Jordan? I just, this guy, man, I just can't like... I wonder when I first heard of Gabor Mate. I think I might have actually first heard him on a different podcast. But he is basically, his research, yeah, is around child psychology. And I was found it interesting because he was the first person who described his own ADHD in a way that was incredibly relevant to my life and didn't feel as prescriptive. So his research, this is me paraphrasing it, I would literally advise anyone to listen to Gabor Mate, especially this podcast. He suggests that ADHD, for example, isn't something that you're born with neurologically, which is what you're often told by specialists, but you're born with the propensity to have it, but your environment essentially triggers it within you. And he described his upbringing and his life and how like it wasn't an abusive upbringing, you know what I mean? It wasn't like an upbringing where there were particularly traumatic events, but the state of play pushed him into his own mind. And he believes that's very much part of ADHD is you're in an environment that where you don't feel necessarily as able to express your authentic self. So you go into your own head as a survival mechanism. And it just, I don't know, man. And I was like, wow, that really does make sense. And then he talks about how that spirals into addiction and I don't know, man. It just he and he's got his beautiful talking voice and he's really calm and, you know, and he's interested in psychedelics and he just seems, and he himself has ADHD. That's what's so brilliant. He's not someone coming here with this kind of hyper-moralistic values. He's like, I have ADHD. I've messed up. I've been like this in relationships. Mm-hmm. I've been like this.
But I think that makes it more trusting, no? Because there's no point someone telling you something if they've no idea what it's like to live with it.
Right? I don't want to segue into us talking about our current political climate, but yes, yeah. I agree with you, Laura.
With him as well, it's like he's not preachy. He's not negative. It's optimistic.
And he's a vibe. He's a lover. He believes that people are born loving. That is actually what separates him from some other professors, is that he believes in the good within people.
So you completely remove morality and condemnation from the vocabulary around addiction. When we see street homeless people, this is not a moral failing. This is simply more suffering. That's all you're witnessing, that the only thing that separates me from a homeless street addict is different. I've had less suffering, better opportunities, more people stepping in and helping.
I've either had less suffering or I've had more help with my suffering than they have received, one or the other.
Yes.
But morality, nobody chooses to be an addict. Nobody chooses to be a street dweller. If you look at the large-scale studies, sociological studies, the more adversity in childhood, the greater risk for addictions, period. And if you look at how the human brain develops, suffering itself distorts the healthy development of the human brain. So when you talk about addiction as a brain disease, well, yeah, it might be, but what creates the brain disease is suffering. During the early period of vulnerable and burgeoning brain development, the kind of emotional and social influences that act upon the brain will have an impact on the actual circuitry and the chemistry of the brain. Now, you describe yourself, I think, as a cocaine and a heroin addict, amongst other things.
Yes.
Well, if you actually look at what did the cocaine do for you, it did something for you that was lacking in your life, vitality, a sense of connection, perhaps a sense of presence, perhaps vitality, something that we all want. The heroin possibly made you feel less pain, made you feel more connected with other people, made you give you more inner peace. These are all qualities that are part of human existence, normally speaking. And the question is, what happens to us in childhood that robs us of these qualities?
There was a bit in it, he was talking about how society, he feels, is designed to escape daily consciousness. That's why we 100%. Love entertainment shows and like everything we do is escapism. Do you think as a society that we don't look enough at ourselves, that we are trying to run away from something?
Yeah, 100%. 100%. We are currently, I believe that we're currently conflicted as a world where a part of us in ourselves, we inherently understand that we're moving ourselves away from what it means to actually be human. So you have these kind of trends like veganism or like yoga or all this stuff that is based in spirituality but has been westernized, but we kind of know we want to do it. But then to the other extent, you know, we have devices at our in constantly with us where we can remove ourselves from our feelings, we can distract ourselves. I do believe that we are actively attempting to pull ourselves away from how we feel, or we're encouraged to. That's probably the better way to say it. We're encouraged to.
When we talk about things, and even talking about TV shows and stuff like that, pop stars, whether you're on Love Island or whether you're in the top charts and stuff, like we're taught that these aren't people. That we're told to like dehumanize people. And then there's that cancel culture as well, that if some pop star doesn't say something we like, that's it, they're gone, they're finished. And rather than actually going, well, why did they say that and what's the root behind it?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of things you mentioned there. The evolution of celebrity and fame is an intriguing one. I mean, I think nowadays I don't really have much of a particular leaning. I think I want people who are put into that environment to prosper. You know, the Love Island contestants who have actually really come into who they are and they have something to say and whatever else. I think that's great, you know, if you take the opportunity. But yeah, of course, there is a responsibility I think we have as a nation, as a culture, to not interact with the condemnation and the kind of, the tearing down of people who are, like I say, the emotional world is not related to the material world. You can have like £1 million and 2 million followers and be utterly miserable. And I think that is something that, you know, we can only grow from understanding.
Going back to Russell's podcast, there's so many different people he's had on his podcast. And he's had Brené Brown. And then speaking of Brené, she's got her own podcast, Unlocking Us. And Oxy, a lot of the podcasts that you're picking out and speaking about is just delving deeper into the human psyche.
I know.
I'm sensing a trend here.
I can't help it. I was looking at my podcast list and I was like, damn, Jordan, you don't listen to anything like funny. Do you know what it is? I dip into other podcasts. Like I do... Yeah. There are some podcasts I listen to that are like about facts or like science. Like I used to listen to this one, Infinite Monkey Cage or something, where it was about quantum physics. That was quite fun.
And then that fun one about quantum physics.
There's something really appetizing about if two people are able to connect with other people, that's amazing. I picked Brené Brown's podcast because I adore Brené Brown. Like I think she's the most watched TED Talk of all time or something. And just she's just unapologetically herself, and it's so inspiring and it's so warm. And she's just hearing her talk on Russell's podcast about boundaries and like about how just the preservation of the kind of human spirit. It's gold. You know, we're in a time when we can hear this. And then I seen that she had Alicia Keys on. I was actually sent that podcast by a friend of mine, Donna. And I'm there like, not only is Alicia Keys in a space where I personally have never heard her being open, she's just written a book, but she's being interviewed by Brené Brown, who is like,
I know.
Do you know what I'm trying to say? Like, who's equally...
You can also hear both of them like fangirling off each other.
Yeah. Literally.
Speaking of Alicia's one too, you're right. I haven't actually heard her speak like that in that space. So openly talking about her family, talking about relationships, things amazing. That she'd done. And there's one thing she talked about, going back to the childhood thing, which I know we've spoken about. That thing, you know, when you're a kid, you're always told, be a good girl, be a good boy. Yeah. And how
shame.
How she won't say that to her little boy now. She tries not to say that because what does that mean? And how we're put into boxes and how... We're nearly trying to live our life by other people's expectations rather than our own.
Yeah, literally.
Then you started to deal with the music's industry machine, who all had ideas about what you should look like and sound like and all of that. So in addition to kind of the contorting and figuring out who you should be, you had a couple of other things that, God, I related to so much. It was painful. One, you had some good girl stuff.
Oh, gosh. That's so annoying. But yeah, so much of it. I had so much of it. And truly, in the past 3 years, maybe four maximum, have I finally understood what that means and how we are told, just be a good girl. Come on, you're not being a good girl. And I hear it and I freak out about it because even with my sons, I really try hard not to say be a good boy. I really, really, really try. I try to get more specific. Be more kind.
Me too.
You know, be more thoughtful, mm-hmm. be more helpful, you know, be more patient, but do not be a good boy. Please don't just be a good boy because I told you to be a good boy. And I realized that that good girl syndrome is all up inside of us so bad and so heavy. And we literally will break our necks and to the detriment of ourselves, anything so that you will just know that I'm a good girl. Please don't think that I'm not a good girl. And we will choke ourselves and kill ourselves to be that. And I truly didn't even realize that. And only in the past 4 years have I been able to unpack that part. And that's been crazy. So yes, it's the worst ever. And it's easy to slip back into.
It's a weight, isn't it?
Oh my gosh.
God, it's a weight.
She's brilliant, isn't she?
Yeah, man. I love Brené Brown. I love Alicia Keys. I listened to another episode as well about grief, actually, which I would suggest to anyone who wants a bit of perspective on how to deal with situations like this, you know?
We're podcasts. Do you kind of get recommended them? I got recommended, a few years ago now, with Super Soul Sunday. Someone just sent me a particular episode. And that's, I find, then I kind of sent it on to someone else. Do you find you kind of get recommendations more so than actually go looking for podcasts?
Oh, you know what? Yes, I do get recommended them. Yeah. In fact, my friend Mackenzie, who I was once my personal trainer and is now one of my best friends, we often, when we train together, we talk about stuff we'd heard in podcasts and theorize about things. And he'll be like, oh, I heard this and I think you'll like it. I exchanged podcasts with someone yesterday as well. And like,
oh, wow.
And we listened to so many podcasts. Like that was, there was one, Christina Tippett on Being or something. I can't remember. Mm-hmm. And oh my God, and we listened to the entirety of My Dad Wrote a Porno.
Oh, brilliant podcast. So you do listen to fun stuff as well sometimes.
Sorry, yes, stuff. I do listen to funny stuff. Yes, I am a real person.
Yeah. The final podcast that I want to mention now, and again, this one is the second time mentioned on the podcast. Actually, it was mentioned on our very first podcast we ever did. It was the Adam Buxton podcast, which is brilliant. And I think... he's up there. When I think of podcasts, I just immediately think of Adam Buxton, British comedian, for those who haven't heard of him before. I mean, you might recognize him from Hot Fuzz, Stardust, Son of Rambo, as well as lots of TV shows. But I just feel he came into his own with this podcast, and it's been going for many years. He's best pals with Louis Theroux, who pops up occasionally on the show. And again, when Louis's on it, you do see a whole other side to him. But one particular episode I want to talk about is with Philip Pullman. Adam like walks his dog and stuff at the beginning of it, and I always think there's a great like ASMR, you know, the sound, especially with a podcast, because it's
oh,
all
yeah, it's great, yeah.
You know, it's all in your ear, and it's the crunch of the leaves and the wind, and it's when he's, I think he goes to the writer Philip Pullman's house. Is he at his house
yeah.
or something?
Yeah,
or,
he goes
yeah
to his house,
a big manor yeah. or something. And I love that. I think the wind, everything, it just gives you a different sense that you're just kind of walking along with them.
And if you extend the notion of consciousness to inanimate objects and things like that, does that bring with it all kinds of complicated moral problems then for how we interact with the world?
Yes, it might easily, mightn't it? And if you start thinking that plants are conscious, you have to apologise to every potato you have.
Well, I was reading about a scientist who is exploring the concept of consciousness and suffering in
yeah.
insects.
Yes.
Which is obviously problematic for all sorts of reasons, or troubling for all sorts of reasons, especially yeah. if insects are going to provide us with a source of protein when
yeah.
food becomes scarce.
Well, that's right. It troubled Darwin, actually. Because
Did it?
Didn't he use, as an example, this ghastly wasp that lays its eggs in a
right.
maggot of some other species? I think it was in the question of whether God existed and how could a merciful God allow that kind of thing to happen. But it's a big puzzle. Nature must be full of extraordinary amounts of suffering.
Mm-hmm. So how do we rationalise it then? We assume that there's some sort of hierarchy of suffering and we...
I don't know.
Or just block it out.
I don't know. Yeah. It's one of the things I'm writing this book to find out.
Which book?
The Book of Dust.
Ah, yes. Will it be the final part?
It'll be the third part.
Yeah.
Not actually writing yet. I've been thinking about it a lot.
Yeah.
After finishing a book, you're not writing so much as administering the consequences of having written.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you go on a book tour and there's enormous numbers of books to sign and interviews and all this sort of stuff, all of which I enjoy, but it's a long way from what the world of literature looked like when I was when I was a young man.
There's a few podcasts who are able to really bring you into a certain environment. Same thing with Jesse Ware's Table Manners. Actually, the more we talk about it, the more I actually realise I've listened to about 1,000,000,000 podcasts. But anyway, that you can feel that you can like feel the kitchen that they're in with Jesse and her mum.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing with Adam. Like when you're with Philip Pullman, like there'll be like tiny little moments of sound or a kettle boiling, and it just like you just. It's amazing. Our imagination is so powerful that that just suggesting something is enough. But with this podcast, interestingly, I haven't actually listened to that much Adam Buxton. I followed him when he did like a YouTube series about YouTube comments, which I thought was really funny, The Bug or something. And I'm a massive fan of him, but I am a huge Philip Pullman fan. Like I'm like massive. And that's the trend with what I'm saying is the combination of the two. I'm now even more of an Adam Buxton fan because my only like relationship with Philip Pullman is through him telling me stories that have defined my childhood and now adult life with the new series or the you know kind of extension of his world with his Dark Materials. And I'd never been caught by a book like that. And the themes, he's just an incredible person. And I've seen it come up, Philip Pullman interview. I was like, Philip Pullman is going to do an actual interview about like, what? Oh, I've got to listen to it. And Adam Buxton was great. And he asked him all the questions I wanted to know. Mm-hmm. And I suddenly knew knew Philip Pullman, who's almost now like a political icon to me now, man, you know? Mm-hmm. And, oh man, yeah, I was blown away, and so much credit to Adam. And now, whenever you know, now I'm going to be trailing through his podcast. And I listened to other people after that. I was like, that was really fun.
I think as well, people like you know, especially someone like Philip Pullman and people who are huge fans of Odd's work, to kind of see things from his perspective as well. Because a lot of times, you know, when authors are doing interviews, it's kind of just about the book. And yes, Adam talks about the book, but he talks about so many other things as well.
He kind of goes into a dissection of C.S. Lewis, I think, from memory. And I was like, whoa, I've never heard authors like audibly deconstruct other authors. Like, do you know what I mean?
Most of the podcasts that I listen to personally, Jordan, would be ones of people I admire and I kind of want to be friends with.
Yeah,
and then suddenly you feel like you feel like you've just, you know, without them realizing, just like pulled a chair up to their table and just joined in.
Yeah. Yeah, literally. Have you interviewed yourself on this?
Have I interviewed myself?
Yeah, have you...
About what podcast I listen to?
Yeah.
I think I started out listening to a very specific type of podcast. I said the Oprah ones, kind of maybe would go under self-help, but Discovery, a lot of Oprah. Females. And Oprah's one, I just love Oprah's one. But I think
I didn't even know she had a podcast.
Oh, Super Soul. Oh, the queen. But again, Super Soul, but she's similar to... Russell, it's such a wide range of people. Like, she has the big names, but she has the not so big names. There was one guy, I think it's called Ray Hinton. I'll put it in the notes. Basically, he killed someone and he went to prison and he did his time. And he comes out now and he does lots of TED Talks. And it was just fascinating. So I kind of went down the rabbit hole of all those ones. But then since doing this podcast, it's opened me up to, do you know what I've started listening to? A lot of murders.
Oh, interesting.
And a lot of there's one called, someone suggested it before. I think it might have been Rankin. I had Rankin on the first series. There was one called The Last Days of August about this girl in the porn industry who took her own life. Or they weren't sure what had happened. And I went to listen to one episode because I'd never heard of it. I listened to a lot of Serial and all the other ones that a lot of people listen to, but not that one. Yeah. And I listened to one episode and then I listened to eight. I listened to all of them in one go back to back.
Whoa, that sounds like a great podcast though. I mean, mystery is that's the, I mean, everyone wants it, didn't they? Everyone wants a bit of mystery. What's going to happen next?
You have two podcasts, as we talked about. You've interviewed so many different people. If there was one person that you could sit down with a microphone to do a podcast with, be it for Killing It, be it for another podcast, who would that be? If you want to drag someone back up from the grave, you can do that.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's a really, I don't know why. I want to say, I don't know
why. Say the first thing that comes into your head, that's always the right one.
Do you reckon?
It's there for a reason.
I did have one. Well, the first one I said I thought in my head would be Prince. Like, if I could bring someone back from the dead. Because it's just the elusivity of some of these people that I find alluring. And the other one would be, I want to say Beyonce. Only because she barely speaks publicly. And I think that I would enjoy creating a space where somebody less willing to, I don't know. I just hear, we've heard a lot inadvertently about stuff that she's been through and inadvertently about stuff that Jay-Z's been through. And I would love her to.
I feel like everything that, I mean, I love Beyonce, she's my queen, but I do feel everything that she does publicly is so PR'd and contrived and has to go through so many people. I don't feel like I've ever heard her just have a chat.
Yeah. Just be real. Which I respect. But, you know, if you're asking me about my dream, I'd also love to speak to an author called Bell Hooks. Mm-hmm. And if anyone has read any of her books, they'll know why I'd want to speak to her. But I tried to look up interviews with her, and there's only like one podcast that I managed to interview her. So I think, especially in times like this, she has a really interesting perspective on people. And yeah. I don't think Bell Hooks is actually even her real name, but that would be cool.
You can ask her when she comes on your show.
Yeah, I should just ask, really.
I have a podcast on BBC Sounds as well called Under the Spotlight, where it's more just an interviewing someone about their life. And they're like, who's your dream guest? And I'm like, oh, the only person I haven't interviewed, like who I've always wanted to interview, is Alanis Morissette, because my favourite album when I was younger was Jagged Little Pill. And it's like, oh, we could just ask. I'm like, oh, yeah. And then we did it.
Wow.
And it's just funny. You're right. Sometimes we just forget to ask. We just assume.
Don't ask, you don't get, man. That has been my motive for my whole life. I found before all of this went down, there was something. Oh, that was it. A lot of people were talking about like 2020, like sharing like the last decade for them. Mm-hmm. And I realized that 2010 would have been the first year where I really gave Rizzle Kicks a go. Mm-hmm. And I went back and I searched for emails from 2010 on my like old email account, right?
Yeah.
And oh my God, one day I will actually print these out and put it in some kind of book, because I think it'd be really good for up and comers or like people who are wanting to achieve something. Cause I was shameless. Like I would email anybody and be like, yo, this is what I want to do. Like, can we make it happen? And sometimes it'd just be like, why? Why are you? They're almost so imaginably far away from, unimaginably far away from where I was at that time. But I just didn't care because I had that mentality. You know,
have you lost some of that? Do you think as you get older and go through the industry, that kind of maybe naivety, but enthusiasm?
Yeah, I do think I'm more, well, it's just awareness of your own personal image. I think that's, you know, I've released solo music recently and, you know, the response has been nice, but like, I know that for somebody who would, if that was their first project, they would have promoted it more than I did. Cause I was a little bit like, I don't know how to explain it.
Is it an ego? Is that wrong?
Of course. I don't know. I'm going to give myself two sides here. There's one side, which is like, probably a pride thing. Like, you know, ideally, I wouldn't want to have to ask people to share my stuff. But on the other side, it's like, I'm not really sure now because of what I've done, if it really is about that for me. It's more about just the fact that I'm having something out there and I'd rather it just grew organically, which was definitely not my mentality when I was a kid. I used to like graft. I used to graft away. I used to make stickers and I used to make these like packs in Jiffy bags where I'd like put a CD and I'd like print the cover and print the CD sticker. And I made a laminated bio. And I'd just go and post it through like record labels' doors. I mean, times have also changed now, so
most people started that way. Like, you know, every you kind of have to put the graft in. My first kind of break getting in television was winning this MTV competition. And someone said, oh, I was so jealous when you won that MTV competition. I remember seeing it. And I was like, oh, did you enter it? And they went, no. I'm like, oh. I'm like, do you know what I mean? They were like, oh, I'm jealous because I remember thinking, oh, I'd love to do that. I'm like, but if you didn't put yourself up for it, you're not going to have a chance. And I think that mentality, because sometimes I see things and I'm like, oh, yeah. And I'm like, oh, but did I actually do anything? Did I get off my arse myself and do anything about it?
Yeah.
So a lot of it does have to come from myself, because what I've learned in this industry is people don't come banging on your door most of the time. You kind of have to bang down theirs.
Yeah, ultimately it all comes down to the belief you have in yourself and self-worth, which is constant maintenance. Oh, do you know one guy who I think is fascinating and would love to speak to? I don't know if he's ever done a podcast, but there's a guy called Lenny B. Johnson. Basically, I was speaking to a friend like last year, and we were talking about black cinema and, like, you know, the success of like Get Out and Black Panther. And but then there have been like loads of other films that were kind of around the same topic. And then we were like, well, wouldn't it be really amazing to see a film about a black inventor, you know, like just a film about invention rather than constantly about, I don't know, potentially re-traumatizing ourselves or whatever. But so I just got into this amazing space of just finding all these incredible black inventors. And then I came across this guy, Lonnie B. Johnson, and he invented the Super Soaker by accident.
Super Soaker.
Yeah. No, listen. I didn't expect
you to say that.
It's so fascinating. No, because he was a rocket scientist.
Fortunately successful, though, by making Super Soaker, probably make more money in the end.
Oh my God, his business is worth like 20 million or billion or something like that. And like, but he made it by accident when he was trying to design something for an actual rocket. And like, yeah, that is a fascinating mind.
I feel like that's a screenplay that you could write.
Okay, Laura, is there any way of us copywriting it on this podcast? Because actually, as I'm saying that, I have an idea. I want to make it into a film. I wanted to bring that to somebody.
Okay, nobody can copy this idea, because you're going to make a call and you're going to copyright that straight away. What does he do? You write it down and stick it in an envelope and seal an envelope, and that actually stands up in court.
Does it?
Yeah.
Well, I suppose if we release this quite fast, then I have time evidence.
You've got time.
Yeah, I'll be like, you heard the fucking podcast and then you went and made the film. I want my rights.
I feel like throughout this podcast, I've given you loads of ideas for different things you're going to do. Because every time we say something, you're like, oh, wait, hold on a second.
No, actually, I maintained my position on that one. I had already thought of the
screenplay. You already had an idea. Do you know what? It resonates, brings me back to Alicia Keys said in Brené's podcast, that we all have different parts in our mind. It's just you can't create if you don't access that part of yourself. And I think a lot of us are going around with all these parts, like you, me, anyone listening to this, that we just don't know are there. And sometimes it can be having a conversation for that catalyst happens.
Oh my
suddenly
God.
You just go bing and you're like, oh, like it's me. It's always been there. I just hadn't opened it before.
Laura, I just think it's the reason why we're here, man. Like, conversation. Mm-hmm. It's just, when I've been, even days when I've been struggling in this quarantine, like if I've just had just to love it, just an exchange of thought, ideas, just reveling in the kind of unknown, it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. And also, especially with creativity, I don't believe that anybody as themselves are really coming up with these ideas. I think we're tapping into a kind of collective field that anyone can. There's some really interesting stuff around that, actually.
Yeah.
Did you know, here's some trivia, that Dennis the Menace was created in America and England within the same week, and neither person knew about each other.
Stop it. Is that a known thing?
I don't know if it's a known thing, but it's the truth. They have a Dennis the Menace in America.
They've got proof to show that neither of them knew about the other idea.
Yeah. Dennis the Menace was created in the 50s. So like, how anyone would be able to within a week.
Have to do that at the same time.
Laura, be real, right? Have you been in a situation where you have known someone's about to speak to you?
Yeah, I've thought of somebody going, God, I haven't heard from them in ages. And then boom, I get a text from them.
Honestly,
we're interesting, us humans, aren't we?
Oh, yeah.
Jordan, it's been really lovely.
Can I ask you something before we end this? How much of your day is consumed planning your TikToks?
How much of your day is spent watching my TikToks?
They're like so good. I just think like...
Really? Do you think they're... I think they're shocking. I think basically it's a platform for 12-year-olds.
You and Ian, that is funny, man.
You know what it's like working in television stuff. I always think the first time you do something's the funniest.
Yeah.
We don't really plan anything. Half the time you do something and what we did the thing, do you know, we climb over each other's body.
Are you claiming there's one, you're doing these in one take?
Yeah, because you can't, like, it's really hard to edit them. Like, once you do them, you just have to do it. Do you know what I mean? I didn't know. Someone only told me this week that there's like a drafts button or something that you can save it. I don't know.
What?
I don't know. It's new to me, but you know what? It's positive. What I like about it compared to other stuff is you don't get, like, Twitter, I feel, has become quite negative and there's a lot of angry, unhappy people while the space of TikTok seems to be fun, energetic, and I like it. Not knocking people.
Yeah. Yeah, that is true.
Brings you joy. Anyway, I'm going to let you go on this. Thank you. I always love talking to you. I always end up talking to you longer than planned. But stay safe. Have fun. I'll see you on TikTok. We'll do a little bit of a dance battle. Thank you, Jordan.
All right, lots of love, man.
And that's it. Another episode down as we delve deep into my guest's audio world. I hope you get cast away by today's top podcast picks. Yeah, I just said that, sorry. All of the podcasts we've mentioned today are included in the episode show notes. Now, if you love this conversation as much as I did, please share your thoughts by leaving a review. And if you'd like to receive weekly installments of Cast Away delivered straight to your phone, hit the subscribe button. Until next time, that's it from me. Take care.